Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Mully and Hanley, mornings live at 5 on Sports Radio 670 The Score, Chicago's sports station.
I felt like if I could shoot something under par today, it would be good. I got off to a great start. You know, birdied one and birdied four, and I was right there. And, you know, I had an 8-iron to 6, and, you know, looking like I could really do something here. Unfortunately, I didn't quite turn it that way, but part of this afternoon wave, I was one of the lower rounds. Tomorrow, I don't know what the forecast is. I don't know if it's still for rain, but we'll see tomorrow, and I'm sure this golf course will slow up a touch just by being in the morning, and see what those guys have to do in the afternoon.
That's the voice of Tiger Woods after he finished his round yesterday, a round that could have been considerably better, although the afternoon wave did not get the best of course conditions. The morning had it a bit easier. It's time to go out to the Score Hotline, where we're joined by Mark Cannizzaro of the New York Post, live from Carnoustie, the east coast of Scotland, where it was very dry, very hot yesterday, and now this morning, raining and a bit softer. Good morning, Mark. How's everything at Carnoustie?
Good morning, guys. It's a little soggy here at the moment, but it's supposed to get a little drier as the day goes.
We'll talk about the conditions in just a moment, but I wanted to get to the piece you wrote today about Johnny Vegas and his travails since he began the journey trying to get to Carnoustie. It's amazing that he's even there, but the story's crazy. What part of it leaves you wondering how he even got to the Open Championship?
Well, I mean, actually, I almost refer to, you know, to once he got here. I think my favorite part is the helicopter ride. Who wouldn't like to be parachuting in a helicopter to get yourself into the tournament? But I think the fact that he got here and his clubs didn't get here, and he was still, I mean, I know that sounds like, you know, to most of us, we don't really, you know, I mean, if we're mid handicappers or whatever, we'll play with whatever. But
yeah,
these guys are so precise, you know, the pros, you know, with the weight of their clubs and the grooves and all that kind of thing, that it's difficult to play with other equipment. I know that sounds kind of crazy to us, you know, regulars, but that's what these, you know, he was essentially playing with a thrown together set of clubs.
Yeah, for those who don't know the story, he had visa problems, didn't even get to, literally didn't get to the golf course until early Thursday morning, after a helicopter ride from Glasgow, I believe, and then his caddy had to throw together a set because even after all the other troubles, including then plane cancellations and what have you, he had no clubs. He had no clubs when he got to the course, and he plays.
Yeah.
What was he like afterward when you talked to him? He seemed to be like totally chill with the whole thing. Like it's been brutal, but I got to play Carnoustie.
Well, you know what? This is only his second Open Championship, and he's like, look, he would have played with a baseball bat if he had to, just to be able to play an Open Championship. It's a shame that he obviously, you know, ends up shooting 5 over par. Hopefully, he'll have a chance to make that up. I'm not aware whether his clubs got here or not today. He said he was hoping they would be here by today. Excuse me, he has an afternoon tea time, you know, he's kind of a chill kind of guy anyway, and he almost seemed a little bemused by the situation, because he said, you know, it was almost like you couldn't make it up, you know, with the succession of crazy things that went against him. He said it almost seemed like somebody was, like, pranking him or something like that. It was somebody was doing it on purpose to him.
Mark, how would Jordan Spieth have reacted?
probably not so smoothly.
Yeah, I would say so. At the Open, the conditions always a lead story here. How do you expect them to change over the next few days with the course?
I don't think anything's going to change dramatically. This is the only day that rain is in the forecast. I think maybe a little bit on Sunday, The biggest thing, to be honest with you guys, is it hasn't been that windy. You know what? Which is why you're seeing halfway decent scores. I mean, it's not like the guys are ripping the place up by any stretch. But like, for example, yesterday it wasn't very windy at all, but it's so baked out and dry because they've had such a hot and rainless summer here so far. That's why when you look on television, it's just all just brown grass. It's just all burnt out. So the difficulty really becomes holding the fairways, because like Tiger said earlier in the week that the fairways are faster than the greens, and it's true. If you land a ball on the fairway, it's going to bounce a lot more significantly than it is going to if you land it on the green.
Yeah, you know, I'm guilty of the narrative of preaching the same narrative as so many others coming into this, that it was going to allow the bombers to continue to hit driver and that they would take even more chances, and it allowed some of the shorter guys to use the baked out conditions to try to hang with some of the bigger guys. But what we saw yesterday was some of the bigger guys making huge mistakes and finding some pot bunkers and some burns because they couldn't control the rollout.
Exactly.
Pardon me. Do you think that whole strategy thing it will change over the next couple of days?
I think it's kind of fluid, to be honest with you. I think it really depends. Like this rain is softening the fairways up a little bit, so that's allowing the bombers to go for it a little bit more. But leading into the tournament, that was actually one of the things that fascinated me the most, because you had two different schools of thought. Like if you look at yesterday, Tiger, who could hit the ball pretty far still. He was laying back all day, hitting irons off tees. But guys like Koepka and Rory and DJ, Dustin Johnson, those guys were like, you know what, screw it. I'm just going to bomb it over the bunkers. And because here's the thing. The rough, because it's been so dry here, is not very green and lush down near the surface of the ground. You know, if they've had a wetter summer, there's a little bit of like kind of that lush, thick grass down below, and then as well as that wispy kind of fescue that you see on TV. Right now, all it is that wispy fescue, and it's pretty easy to hit out of that stuff.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it grabs your club a little bit, but it's not that bad. And the big hitters don't mind being in that stuff, because if they're 7 feet away from the green, they can stay on the green. But as you said, they were still finding some trouble yesterday. Brooks Koepka shot 41 on the front side yesterday.
Yeah.
And in fact, right before I came on with you guys, he shot 41 on the front, 31 on the back yesterday, and he's one over in the golf tournament and right in this thing right now, which is, I think that's probably one of the most remarkable turnarounds that's taken place, in the last, 20 hours or so.
Yeah, I was thinking about Koepka and some of the other big names. Dustin Johnson, it looks like it's going to be tough for him to even make the cut. He only has a few holes left here. But any other big names aside from Koepka that you see making a run today or tomorrow?
Well, right now, Rory has had a fantastic round. I mean, just before I went on with you guys, he's got a couple holes to play, and he's one off the lead.
And as you speak, he sprays one right on 17.
Oh, of course. I just completely jinxed him. Jason Day, at last look, had gotten himself under par, very quietly. Nobody's been talking about Jason Day, but, all of a sudden, I don't know if he's one or two under, but that's right there. Anything in and around even par at the end of the day is well into this thing on the weekend without question. No offense to Kevin Kisner, but, it's Kevin Kisner, the early leaders yesterday, this young South African, Van Ruyen, Tony Finau, these are guys that have never won majors, So, the experienced guys that have major championship trophies, they look above them in a leaderboard, and they kind of know, who's really a threat to maybe possibly run away with it or something like that. The guys right now at the top of the leaderboard, at least after yesterday's round, we're not threats that we're going to be going running away and hiding. So if you're just, yesterday and today is all about just kind of jockeying for position, keeping yourself within striking distance for guys like Rory and Tiger. Spieth is going to play this afternoon. He's got to rally a little bit. He was one over yesterday, but that's hardly out of it. One over is only six shots out of the lead right
yep.
now. So, it's a jockeying for position to get themselves into the weekend and then, start making some moves.
Mark, before we let you go, Tommy Fleetwood, popular pick coming in, obviously off of what he did at the U.S. Open and some of his play last year. A very logical pick. But what about the pressure of a guy from England to bring, sorry to use the phrase, coming home, to bring the claret jug home?
Well, you know, it's interesting that I believe it's been 25 years since an Englishman has won this British Open. So, I think there'd be a lot of, listen, if he's right there on Sunday, there'd be a lot of pressure for a lot of reasons. He's never won a major yet. He's still a relatively young guy on the scene. He's clearly, you know, kind of one of the hot players right now. Full disclosure, I've got a few pounds on him at the local betting parlor. So I'm quietly rooting for him to play well. It's going to be anybody that has not hoisted a major championship trophy. When they get to Sunday, it's a whole different mind, you know, feeling through your body, mindset. If you're Tommy Fleetwood, you have to just throw out the thought of being the first Englishman. I mean, you know, that's just adding, that's adding logs onto the fire at that point. You know, I mean, you just got to kind of stay within yourself. I know it sounds cliche, but you can't add all that stuff. You know, and that's for us to write about and the fans to talk about and whatnot. But, he's a guy that's absolutely been knocking on the door. I mean, he went crazy at the U.S. Open in Shinnecock on Sunday and had an incredibly good final round, even though it was coming from behind where there's a lot less pressure when you're coming from behind. But, you know, nonetheless, he still posted the number at Shinnecock when everybody else was, you know, standing in place. So all the credit to him and, you know, for the sake of my wallet, hopefully he carries on the next 2 days.
Best
Mark,
of luck.
Mark, thanks for your time. Let's not have a Vandeveld this weekend. Nice job on the Golf Channel special, by the way. Have yourself a good time. I hope you cash.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate it. Have a great weekend.
You too. Mark Canizzaro from the New York Post. You can follow him on Twitter at Mark Canizzaro. Coming up 6:40, Peter Gammons. It's Barry Rosner, Joe Ostrowski. In for Mully and Hanley on 670 The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
I do think it's really important for the sport, broadly defined, to market its players. The game is about the players. I think that the way you build your brand and you build your fame in today's world has changed. It's not enough to be the best on the field. You have to be prepared to give fans
social media
that access via social media. And, you know, it's something that we're going to make a genuine effort to try to be of assistance to our players on.
That is the voice of Commissioner Rob Manfred on the Dan Patrick Show a couple of days ago. It's not enough. It's just not enough, Joe. Not enough to be the best player in the game. That's not good enough for Rob Manfred.
I know what you are. I don't want you to be what you are, Mike Trout. Be something else.
Yeah,
be about you. Be against what we preach in baseball, right?
Be somebody
about
else.
Being a team.
Be somebody else, yeah. We talked about it yesterday. We will talk about it again because I had a conversation with Ryan Sandberg yesterday. I wrote about that. You can find it on my Twitter feed or on my Facebook page. We will get into that in a bit. Bad idea to try to be something that you're not. Very bad idea. But your commissioner, your guy, Rob Manfred, Joe, I think he really messed up this time. I think he really messed up. There's a lot of people really, really angry. And we'll talk about that in a bit. Let's go to the phones, though, at 312-644-6767. Kevin in Palatine is on the Mully and Hanley show this morning.
Good morning, Kevin. Guys. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday.
I had a question for you. So National League only. Obviously, there's now with the Cleveland trade, there's actually four terrifying teams in the American League, and I can't wait to see those playoffs because that's going to be insane. But for the National League, and I know every morning, especially Joe seems to wake up with just dread about the Cubs every morning. So if you look at the Dodgers,
when was that?
The horrific Kenley Jansen and their bullpen and their rotation, and Philadelphia has flaws, and every team in the National League has flaws. And John Lester did an interview over the All-Star break with NBC, and he said he's actually getting pretty sick of all the nitpicking and whining about the Cubs being in first place. So Who are these perfect teams we have to be terrified of in the National League?
I think you know the answer, Kevin.
Thanks for the call,
You know the answer. There isn't one. And I don't know. So I'm being negative about the Cubs by saying they're going to run away with the Central, that it's them and probably the Dodgers at the top of the National League. That's what it is. That's how I look at it right now. And I'm curious to see what the other teams involved do, like the Phillies and the Braves. Are they going to make some sort of a move?
And Joe, to your point, is winning the National League enough? That's not enough. This isn't a question of Kevin in Palatine, and I know you're still listening, and we thank you for that. It's not good enough just to get there. It's not good enough to play for the pennant. It's not good enough to just win the pennant. And I know that sounds to the folks over at 35th and Shields like, listen to these rotten, spoiled Cub fans now. But this team is not. This team is built to win the National League. That's not all that great this year, but it's not built to win the World Series. Not right now. Not right now.
This segment is brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Kevin's question specifically was about the National League, and as I've been talking about for a couple weeks now, they're the supposed super teams that were supposed to emerge in the National League and end these division races before they even started. Have not occurred. Have not manifested. The Nationals. Wow, that's one of your super teams.
Then they're going to blame Davey Martinez because that's what they do with the Nationals. They just like to blame the manager for everything.
You know, they've had so many injuries. There's really nobody to blame. Everybody's been hurt.
Barry will also blame Dave Martinez.
Yeah, he will
because he hates.
He hates him.
I don't hate Dave Martinez.
You do. You have a vendetta.
No, I think it was a laughable hire when there were much better managers available, and I thought the narrative that Dave Martinez sat next to Joe Maddon and learned everything from Joe Maddon and was his co-manager and all that is nonsense. Joe manages the team. I mean, Joe manages the team. There's not a lot of, hey, Davey, what do you think we should do here? There's not a lot of that going on.
I think other coaches had a larger role than Davey Martinez.
Yeah, so that's why that was amusing to me. I don't have anything against Davey Martinez. I just thought it was a bad hire. But they've had a lot of injuries. Obviously, Kevin, here's the answer. It's that everyone nationally now thinks the Dodgers are unbeatable because of Manny Machado. And I believe that to be nonsense. I think Manny Machado is a phenomenal baseball player. But I think he's a much better third baseman than he is a shortstop. He's going to be a great offensive player no matter where he is. He makes their lineup much better no matter what position he plays. But the Dodgers have had a lot of problems in their rotation this year. I would expect those rotation problems to continue. They're fortunate that they have extraordinary depth that gets them through a season. But get them to a postseason and, how confident are you? Is Clayton Kershaw going to be completely healthy? By the way, he's not Clayton Kershaw anymore.
Yeah.
Okay?
I know.
So
is it completely foolish to say that that division is not a lock?
No, it's not a lock. Everybody's mailing that in now because of Machado. Absolutely not.
Oh, half-game lead?
The Diamondbacks intend to do something still. I wouldn't be surprised to see the Rockies do something with their improved play of late.
And how much longer are they going to have Arenado? Like, there's a window there for them. He's going to go out, and he's probably going to leave there,
too. Yeah, he'll be leaving in a year. So that's I could see them being aggressive.
Same situation for Arizona with Goldschmidt.
And there is the Dodgers bullpen, where he brought up the name of Kenley Jansen, which is a legitimate concern. Much as I've been very worried about Brennan Morrow, I would be very worried about Kenley Jansen, who at times this year has looked nothing like Kenley Jansen. Now, over the last month, 6 weeks, he looks a lot more like Kenley Jansen, but who knows how long that lasts. They need arms, and they need plenty of them. They made a great move. It's for a phenomenal baseball player who I absolutely adore. But their problems were not on the field. Their problems were in the rotation and in the bullpen, and they've yet to address that.
The Cubs are favorites or co-favorites to win the National League as far as I'm concerned. But I don't understand how you not be worried about the Cubs not having a number two starter and not having a closer right now going on the DL for a second time.
No, your concerns about the Cubs are all legitimate. And I think most Cub fans who are being realistic would probably share those. All right, we got to take a break for a Joe Ostrowski update. Coming up 6:40, Peter Gammons on Mullion Hanley on The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Peter Gammons, MLB Network analyst.
Around the pole and gone.
Taking you inside Major League Baseball with the Hall of Famer, Peter Gammons.
Welcome back in on Mullion Hanley on The Score. Barry Rosner, Joe Ostrowski with you today, filling in for the boys. Right now, it's time to go out to The Score hotline, where we're joined by the Hall of Famer, the one and only Peter Gammons of the MLB Network. You can follow him on Twitter at PGammo, and you can hear him right now on 670 The Score. Hey, Peter.
Good morning.
What is the next move for the Los Angeles Dodgers now that everybody seems to think they've taken over the National League? I think that might be a bit of an overreaction, but huge move for them with Manny Machado. What's next for the Dodgers?
Probably two different relievers. Their starting pitching now is in really, really good shape. Maeda, the split that he's come up with, has made him a dominant pitcher. I don't think they'll be putting him back in the bullpen again. And they now have six or seven starting pitchers, and Machado picks up. They can move guys around. Taylor can go over to second base. They can do a lot of things with their lineup. And it gives them that one really, really good hitter. You don't have to play Peterson and Bellinger every day unless they start hitting a lot. The amazing story has been what Max Muncy, who got released by the A's last year, has done for that lineup, because he never swings at bad pitches, and he's become, in some ways, their most reliable hitter. And they're really good, but they still need a couple of relievers, and I do believe they'll get them. I don't know if they can get an Iglesias from Cincinnati, but I do think that they can get a couple of guys who can fill in and be pretty decent. I mean, whether it's Givens from Baltimore or Brock from Baltimore, and I know they're looking at some other guys like Clippard and guys like that. But it'll be very interesting to see. But they're good. But the Cubs still have the best run differential in the league. The Cubs have a sizable lead. And here they are where they are right now. And to think that in 25 starts, Darvish and Chatwood have four wins. I mean, that to me is amazing. It's going to be very interesting to me to see where the Cubs go, whether they go starter or whether they worry enough about Morrow to say, you know what, we're going to go out and get a guy that can either pitch the eighth or the ninth.
Yeah, that's where I was going to go with my question. What do you think is more important? Because Darvish, it doesn't sound like he's close. It's looking like at least a three-month absence overall. And then Morrow goes down to the DL for the second time in the season already yesterday.
Yeah, In my way of thinking, maybe what they do is they get a fungible fourth or fifth starter, and they try to get the best they can do with relief. There isn't a lot out there now. I mean, if the Orioles want a ton for Britton, and I don't think Dan Duquette has ever recovered from being replaced by Theo Epstein, that's going to cost a lot. We have no guarantee. I mean, straight over the top, high three-quarter, power sinker ball guys, once they get hurt, very seldom ever come back with this. Not the same velocity, because his velocity is about the same, but he doesn't have the same command, and his command has been absolutely abysmal since he's come back. So I think that's a kind of gamble. It could have a high upside, or it could be just a waste of money. So it'll be interesting. I mean, there are some guys, Chad Green in Detroit, and I'd be a little afraid of Barrett Claw in Miami, but I do think they'll do a couple of things and just see how it works out.
Peter, that's interesting. You really think that the Orioles might have difficulty dealing with the Cubs?
I think the Cubs would have to satisfy what Dan Duquette wants. And, if he wants quantity, the Dodger trade was nice. If you got like a guy that was never really going to probably play regularly for them, Diaz, and be able to say, look, we got four guys. Of course, one of them was released by the Cardinals last year, but that's we don't tell the fans that. Yeah. And we don't put him in the big leagues because then the fans will realize he can't play. I mean, to me, a real deal is what the Cubs did with the Yankees when they knew they didn't have enough bullpen to go through three rounds of playoffs. It's what the Indians did yesterday. They gave away by far the best player traded as far as Mejia in terms of prospects. But they get Brad Hand, they get him for 4 years. So, that to me is the type of deal. You go for the highest ceiling you can get. Even if you only get one guy from Machado, try to get the really high ceiling guy.
Are the Mets going to make a big move or hang on to their starters?
I think they'll hang on to their starters. I mean, they may make one of the back-end guys. Wheeler could be available. And he'd be an interesting gamble for a team because he's got velocity. The question is he going to stay healthy? I find him kind of an interesting guy, just like a lot of people are going, well, what about Matt Harvey out of Cincinnati? That's an interesting one, too, because he's definitely gone from Cincinnati at the end of this year. So those are guys that could change some races around. And I think the other thing is, it's going to be very interesting, right at the deadline, what exactly are the Cardinals going to do? I've heard a lot of rumblings that they may end up selling at the deadline. So, I mean, if you look at that team, like watching last night, how bad they are defensively, you say, and it reminds me of what one very smart baseball person who's now managing, so I won't mention his name because I don't want to get somebody mad at him, but said to me, the Cardinals look like they're an entire team of second basemen, which I thought was a hysterical line. And it's tremendous. And they really are. I mean,
yeah.
Colton Wong might go someplace and play pretty well. But they've suddenly become dysfunctional in a lot of ways. And, the ideas that went on so many years with that organization and how they developed players and the book, The Cardinals Way, it's passé now. It's not the same thing anymore.
Yeah, it's dreadful to watch. Last night was particularly so. Peter, do you think that watching Bryce Harper have a good time and smile for the first time in months at Home Run Derby might have some impact on his second half? And what's your confidence level in the Nationals being able to turn this around?
I'm not wildly confident about the Nationals, although, getting a couple of guys back, getting Strasburg back will really help them. And I don't know how much the Phillies and Braves can keep going here. But my theory on Bryce Harper, I ran it by a guy that when he played for them was one of his best friends, is that from the time he was 16, he was supposed to become the greatest modern player. And he's had tremendous moments. He's been an MVP. But it's like it's never, no matter what he does, it's not enough. And I think that's really debilitating to a person. And I think he sometimes plays like that, that it's just, it's never going to work. And he gets so mad at himself if he grounds out and then doesn't run. It's not because he's not hustling. It's just that he's just so frustrated. I thought the relationship with the fans in Washington was a turning point. Now, I don't know if Scott Boras is going to say, well, I should play into this, or whether it's just going to be who gives him the most money, which will just create more expectations.
Yeah.
But I did feel like, I think it would be good for Bryce to go, you know what, if I re-sign here and play almost my entire career in Washington, these people have been with me a long time. And maybe it's the best thing for me to stay here rather than go somewhere new and say, okay, now I'm making $40 million. I have to prove it every day. And I don't know how happy he's been playing baseball the last 2 or 3 years. And I thought that was the happiest I've seen him in a long time. And believe me, I really like him. He's very smart. I think there are a lot of good intentions there. It just, they get very confused.
Rob Manfred had no idea that he was going to be raked nationally like he was this week. But I wonder if this has anything to do with it. What's the relationship like right now between Major League Baseball and the Players Association?
I think the kindest way to put it is ugly. There's a real distance, and there's a lot of pressure from the players who are saying, you know, it's great that we have an extra seat on, you know, we have a seat between us on the bus in spring training. We all have chefs at our clubhouses, but trading off the way the system is just gives owners every opportunity to restrict the actual free agency. And it's happened, and I think players are pretty upset about it. And it's not the owners. I mean, Rob Manfred, Dan Heel, and very tough guys. But the union agreed to things that, frankly, players could pay for themselves. I mean, you know, they could pay clubhouse dues and get their clubby to bring in a chef or something, you know, or, you know, Gary Sheffield, Barry Bonds used to have their own chefs. Matter of fact, Giancarlo Stanton does too. So it's just they traded immediate conveniences for the long-term view of where salaries are going. And I think it's really frustrated players and agents, and it's created a chasm. And, I mean, they've got four more years on the current agreement. To be already talking about a strike, to me, is shocking. Because, you know, you start talking too early, it's dangerous for fans. They don't want to hear that an industry where the average player makes over $4 million, they don't want to hear that they feel that life is unfair. And even though owners are very good at making players look to be in the wrong, that's just the way it is, especially in a country where in the last 15 months, wages across the country have gone down.
All right, Peter, thanks for your time. Always appreciate it. Look forward to talking to you next week.
Thanks a lot.
Peter Gammons of the MLB Network, always managing to squeeze in a little bit of politics along the way. But I liked his point on Bryce Harper about the human side of this. You know, there's a lot of people who, you know, they spend their days on fan graphs and they're not really watching the games. They don't interact with players or know that there's people who are actually playing this game that are emotional and are subject to that.
Some people in the booth that do that.
Bryce Harper is certainly one of those guys, and I think Peter makes a great point. The best thing that could happen to him is maybe taking a little bit less money, signing now, and getting on with his life.
Yeah, I don't care what Laura Ingraham thinks.
He does always take a jab at some point.
That's Joe Ostrowski. I'm Barry Rosner. You've got Mully and Hanley on the Score. Coming up next, it's Gordon Wittenmeyer on the Cubs right here on 670 The Score.
Vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.